You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, we have the double-headed dream team edition of David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, both from Johannesburg. Gentlemen, so much to talk about. David, I'll start with you on the local front. Horrible day on the JSC.
Led from
overseas and also uncertainty about the election. But you've also got the bond rates rising. Sorry, the South African 10-year having a fairly unpleasant day. Not too bad, but going in the wrong direction. And the South African Reserve Bank leaving rates flat. Just sort of sum it up for us, if you would.
Well, I think the surprise, or maybe not the surprise, is that the election story and the concerns are that the evidence at the moment is that the ANC will fall below 50%.
Yes.
And for the meantime, it looks like they're, it's 43-44%. Which means they have to have a coalition. And the fears are that if they go to the right, whether it's the MK party or, or the EFF, the kind of policies that these parties will insist upon are not exactly market friendly, very, very concerning. In other words, that's why the markets are responding the way they are. As the economists put it, as I mentioned to you on Monday, they said, both these parties tend to hate whites. And I'm quoting them. The only white they seem to like is Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of sums up the fears that outside investors might have if some kind of coalition is done. And they will insist on some high cabinet appointments, and as I say, I can't see Malema becoming the Minister of Agriculture or something like that. He's going to want to flout around, and pomp around the country as well as Deputy President or whatever. So I think that's the fear. And we've seen it. We saw the shares, market knock today. So,
Viv, you can come in on this one now. But the interesting thing about this, Viv, is someone looking from the outside says that MK has done quite well. This is Zuma's party, has done quite well in KwaZulu-Natal. And it's almost as though it just sort of sums up the divisions there are in South Africa. It's almost like somebody saying, well, you've got a potential prime minister in Britain that comes from Yorkshire, and all the people from Yorkshire voting for that person. But it doesn't work like that. But in South Africa, it does.
Yes, I mean, kind of like it used to work like that in the US, where you'd have the vice presidential candidate from some other part of the country to top up your voting in that part of the country. In South Africa, unfortunately, the tribalism still exists to a certain extent. But the one that really worries me is not the MK or the EFF, it's the PA, the Patriotic Alliance, with Gayton McKenzie. And, yes, David had mentioned, the generic, anti-white stuff that the EFF and the MK party to some extent. And the MK is not as bad as the EFF, but, generally there is there. But it doesn't quite match the vitriol you see from the PA party towards migrants, especially from other parts of Africa. You recall a while back there was a building that collapsed in George.
Yes.
And some of the statements made by the PA around that was quite, quite disgusting, quite frankly. Similar kind of statements were made a couple of years ago when there was that fire in the Joburg CBDs where a number of children died and so on. And, the stuff said there, I don't think even the EFF would say that, if there was a tragedy that affected, white people, more than others. The PA is that next level. And they are currently got about 5% of the vote, 4-5% of the vote. They're above the IFP. They are easily the fifth largest party in the country at the moment. So it's basically the ANC low 40s, DA mid 20s, low teens, or like around 10 for EFF and MK. And the next level of 5% to 4% goes to the MK party ahead of the IFP, which shows that there is a populist, but an ugly populist sentiment in South Africa that I hadn't thought was there. And that is really worrying as well.
And if you were an overseas investor, Viv, staying with you, and you looked at this and you didn't know too much about the ins and outs of and intricacies of South African politics, would you also be worried? Because all you need to know is that there's stability with the ANC still in power. Okay, they haven't done a good job over the last 30 years, but at least they're the devil you know. Would you be worried with the parties that you've just suddenly thrown into the mix?
Most certainly. I mean, you're exactly right. I was just having a thing to the company this morning, and I was discussing the fact that, you know, the ANC has been in power for 30 years, and though we in South Africa have complaints about it, whatever, as a general like rule, they've been reasonably, you know, stable. They haven't been like, you know, they've kind of been adults in the room. They haven't gone out and really blown the budget apart. They haven't done stupid things with regards to the interest rate policy and changing the Reserve Bank. They've talked about things like the NHI and whatever, but they haven't really pushed anything through that has been really like, you know, scary at the moment. But you just have to look at a place like, for instance, Turkey. And I've always, my example is Turkey, where you have a party in power that was a big change from the previous regime, has made the currency go from like 3 to 30 against the US dollar in a period of less than a decade, has caused huge uncertainty in that country, really affected growth. And I think that is something that's possible in South Africa if we do see a period of like coalition and other kinds of governments coming into the country, unfortunately.
Yes, a pretty bleak picture, I must say, and suddenly delving into it with you two has sort of heightened my senses when it comes to what's going to happen in the next couple of days. I don't know when the votes are accounted completely, but surely by the weekend we'll know with rough percentages. David, the South African interest rate scenario was predictably boring, and a lot more work to be done on the downside for inflation, as it is in the States. But we'll come to that in a moment. But the Reserve Bank is a pillar of stability, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there was no mention about or real mention. I was occupied looking at the elections and one or two other things, but I don't think they carry on regardless. You know, not really swayed by what's happening in the election. I mean, it must be at the back of their mind, the concerns that, as Viv says, you know, they might be, or that we might be overrun by one of these populist parties, and there go their policies. But they have held up very, very strongly. And I think even leading up to the election, there was a view that the ANC would hold on to 50% and that things would remain as Viv said. They haven't been, you know, when it's come to financial policies, they haven't been populist at all. They might have suggested it, but there is a real possibility that things might change if, you know, depending on the coalition. And I think that's why you've seen such a strong reaction here. But the Reserve Bank continue, you know, lead policy, looking at inflation, looking at the things they would have looked at even if there wasn't an election. And I have to hand it to them. I've always had high regard for them, as well as Treasury, you know, who have, you know, just who have kept the purse very tight and have not acted irresponsibly. The ANC has, that's a different story, but not the, you know, not the Minister of Finance.
Under the Guptas, the Zuma regime, which was heavily influenced by that family I just mentioned, it might have been very, very different. They could have easily swayed decision making. Viv, just your take on the interest rate story. It's not a difficult one to predict in South Africa at the moment.
Well, most certainly. I mean, we couldn't have run ahead. The Reserve Bank that we have is competent. It's cautious. It's exactly what you want a Reserve Bank to be, quite frankly. I've never had an issue, even though I have disagreed sometimes on what the policy was, I've never had an issue with regards to their competence, their decision-making, or their, you know, impartiality. And it's one of the real jewels in the South African institutional situation. The example, again, go back to Turkey. Look at what that happens when that Reserve Bank gets out of control, where they start cutting rates when the market says they should be raising, when they start basically enacting policies that the market was not thinking is prudent. And, you know, it can really get out of control. And not just Turkey. Look at a place like Argentina, Brazil, you know, throughout the developing world, you see a number of things. And an interesting thing, I don't know if you guys saw this from the FT this morning. There was an article showing South Africa's per capita GDP. And we've just basically dipped below the average for the emerging and developing markets. Okay. You look at, for instance, I mean, you think of basket cases, and I mean, I use that term, you know, cautiously, but places like Egypt, for instance, you wouldn't think as being a thriving economy. If we had grown as fast as Egypt over the last, say, 20 years or so, our economy would be more than 50% larger than it is right now.
Gosh.
Algeria also outperformed us. Have you grown at the average of the emerging markets over the last 20, 30 years since independence, basically, or since, you know, democracy? we'd be almost three times larger than we are right now. Three times larger. So that is just showing not only are we basically not, you know, keeping up with what we should be keeping up in terms of, like, you know, goals for the future. We aren't keeping up with the average of the developing world, and by a long shot. And so this is quite troublesome, what's been happening in South Africa over the last little while.
You spoke of Argentina.
You
know,
you raised something this. Lindsay.
David, just before you go on, I just want to mention, otherwise it'll go out of my my brain. Viv mentioned Argentina. I don't know if you saw the footage of him when he launched his new political book, which sounded a very, very interesting title, but he was dressed up in leathers and he was the lead singer of quite a famous Argentinian heavy metal band. Did you see that? Can you imagine Biden doing that? Anyway, I've gone off at a tangent. Please go on.
That's Argentina. Yeah. Just going on from what Viv says, if the ANC, if Cyril Ramaphosa had any kind of common sense, and if he was who we thought he was 8 years or 5 years ago, he would do a deal with the DA. He would say, okay, let's go centre. We have to go centre because it's the only way that we can actually sort things out and pick and make things pick up. Because the one thing about DA, we might criticise him. I've mentioned this before, not everybody likes him, but at least they try, and they try to fix things up. And they've had, you know, there has been evidence of what they have done or tried to do. And I certainly see it in the ward that I live here. There's a DA councillor who just stands above anybody else that I have ever seen. She just works tirelessly. And that's where we need to go. I've just come back from Australia. And when my brothers immigrated there, in 1986, I couldn't believe they were heading there. But at that stage, we were pretty similar. You know, they were slightly ahead of us. Mm. But when I see where they are today and where we are, that's where we should have been. Significantly more, you know, richer than us. It's a rich country with a very high GDP per capita. And so, you know, we've got to aim towards doing that. We've got this. We've got the means to do it. You know, we've been blessed as a country. It's not like we're starving. You know, we haven't got natural resources like Japan, or we've got labor. We've got whatever you need, and we can find the capital. But you just need the will to get this place right. For me, it's tragic.
I've got the feeling that this might be, it's not a disaster, but an opportunity. Should the DA be able to, the ANC be able to swallow their pride and say, okay, this is a party that was essentially white and we were essentially black, and therefore ne'er the twain shall meet. But now there's an opportunity to do something. Yeah. And so just get on with it. But anyway, whether they will or not, we'll soon find out. David, I've got to stay with you quickly because Anglo-American, the bid has gone now from BHP, according to press reports, but I'm sure it'll resurface. Old Mutual trading update, Woolies trading update, and that's the one I want to focus on, really. Woolies shares down, 6-7% or something?
Yeah, 7.
7, yeah. Not good. What did the trading update say?
It just said things are bad. You know, they're okay with food, but otherwise apparel, and I think that got us by surprise. I don't think we were expecting as severe an announcement as they came out with. I know the food side, but certainly Australia, you know, consumers are now slowing down, not spending, but they've been hurt on that side. And I think, you know, while the food is holding up and that other side is falling. And I think the market was taken aback, didn't expect this, thought that things were going in the right direction. So it does give you an idea of how tough things are here on the ground. I don't know how Viv saw it, because there wasn't a lot of detail. You know, it was just commentary.
But I think it was also bad to be SA Inc. today. Mm. You look at everything that fell, basically, except for like a Kumba Aino or something. Virtually everything was the banks, the retailers. Mm. If you were SA Inc. today, you were basically seeing red. And so this was the wrong time to come up with an SA Inc. story that was not as positive as market had been hoping. Yeah.
Okay. And I wonder if that'll sort of spread to the other retailers when their trading updates come out. But we shall see. Viv, I want to talk to you about something that caught my eye today. It's a company called Salesforce with its share price down 19%. Yeah. David, you're going to come in on this one in a moment. But what When I read the headlines, Viv, this is your AI, your obsession AI, finding its first casualty, Viv. I mean, they're saying that this software company just hasn't updated to AI and it's getting left behind. And I think it's had its worst performance since 2004. So it's just showing. It's almost like this situation with Nokia when BlackBerry came out and then Apple and all the other ones, Huawei, etc. It's a similar sort of scenario, Viv.
Well, yes, most certainly. Look, I mean, the thing with Salesforce that doesn't know, don't know, they have a thing called Slack that's really like, you know, a powerful tool. And in many parts of the corporate world, that's kind of like your go-to in your company. You know, it's like the company chat or whatever. And you've seen since the emergence of like AI, I mean, there's a thing from David Sachs from, you know, ex-PayPal, the All In podcast. He has something called Glue that basically uses AI to like, you know, extract the important part from different chats so that you can see what's relevant to you across a larger company. And this is the kind of stuff that's been coming in play. Now, look, I mean, as a CRM kind of sales kind of, you know, back office kind of thing, there's opportunity and there's cost here. The unfortunate part is that it's very difficult for the established player to come out and play in this field. It's like Google with regards to search. It's actually easy for Bing to take over than for Google to basically revamp what they have. Same thing with Salesforce. It's hard for them to basically upgrade to the new AI system as opposed to, for instance, a startup to come in. And they've seen, for instance, that the big corporates have pulled back you know, quite heavily in terms of spend. And this is like the first thing, I think, first time they've had a disappointing number in almost 20 years, from 2006 till now.
Yes.
So, yeah, this is some really bad stuff. And I'm really worried about South Africa as an aside. I know people that work in the back office industry in South Africa. I don't know if you know that. There's a lot of people working here doing like call center work, et cetera, because the English language and the cultural stuff means that they are more able to talk to people from the U.S. than, for instance, someone from India is. And I recently heard that a number of big U.S. companies are pulled out of their contracts in call center workers in Africa. And we're talking thousands of people per contract that are going to be unemployed. Mm. So it is a major shift change happening in the world right now. And unfortunately, it's just going to accelerate over the next couple of years.
David, you've mentioned the company Salesforce on many, many occasions during our chats. What is your impression of this? Is this a salvageable?
I have to do a little bit more research into it because the pure numbers weren't that bad. It's just the outlook and how people perceive it to be. You know, it's one of these businesses that, before we got AI was transitioning a lot of other companies onto the cloud and bringing all the different services together. You know, in other words, that you didn't need separate components. It's a Dow component. It's one of the Dow 30.
Yes.
And that's why you've seen the Dow knocked as much as it is today, simply because of Salesforce. So, you know, to be included there, they wouldn't include you if you were a shabby company. So it is a little bit of a surprise. There is a chance for them to recover. Personally, I'm saying, okay, don't act on one quarter. But I must say, I was a little shaken by the way that the market has responded. And you're right in your assessment that there are going to be casualties. You know, not every company is going to benefit from AI. You know, if you slacken, if you're not there, which is the case now, they were a little disappointed with their what they call their generative AI programs or offering. So they were appropriately smacked, you know, and this is hard to digest. So, but I have, you know, I'm always loath to just, you know, respond immediately, have a knee-jerk reaction and just really go into it and see if there is recovery around. It's a big business. So, and as I say, it is a Dow component. So, one must see, but I'm a little shaken by 20% down. Okay, I could live with 5, 6, 7, but 20.
Yeah, it is quite a big move for, as you say, a Dow 30 component. It's a monster of a moon. David, you've got to go in a few minutes' time. So will you give us the closing JSE indices, as you always do, and then Viv and I will sort of wrap it up once you've fled to television?
I'm just also looking at, I know that you, I don't know if you, you know, I'm just looking at Anglo's because I still think that's a major discussion point.
Yes.
It was down initially in London yesterday, but somehow it seems to be stable. But when we go through the JSE, you'll see that companies that are part of the part of Anglers, you know, whether it's Kumba or Angler Plats, have been absolutely trashed, you know, today. Yes. Really hurt hard by concerns. But JSE ended down 1.8%. Okay. And that's, and we saw weakness right across the board. Most of the weakness was in the financial area. As Viv said, you know, we saw banks under a lot of pressure today. Banks down 4%. The broader financial index down about 3.6%. So that's where most of the pain was taken. But also, retailers came under a lot of pressure. You know, consumer discretionary down 2.5%. The broader, you know, the broader industrial index down only just over 1%. But I think also saved by a much weaker rand and also by some of the European and foreign markets, you know, where some of our big companies are listed. But listed property also down, you know, 1.5%. So I think broadly a big sell-off of SA Inc. just on the activity side. Quite a bit of turnover today, more so than we have seen, 25, you know, nearly 26 billion. But Anglo's leading, you know, up nearly making up 9%. Normally it's Naspers that makes up most of the volume, but today Anglo's.
I wonder how much of that was people that heard the news about the bid and think thought to themselves, okay, there's going to be two or three new offers at higher prices, and suddenly the deal's off the table. They've had to dump it. It looks a little bit like that, but elsewhere on the JSE, on the downside, Woolies, as we've spoken about, 7.25% weak. Impala Platinum down 7.1%. Northam's down 7.1% as well. TFG, another retailer, of course, down nearly 7%. And Pepco, another retailer, down 6.4%. On the upside, not very much. Just rats and mice up between 2.25% and 2.75%. Companies like Pan African and Karoo and South 32, etc. But it's really been dominated by the downside. David, thanks very much. I know you've got to dash off to another commitment now. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities, and he'll be back with me on Monday with Viv next Thursday. And Viv and I will just carry on regardless now. Viv in the United... Viv, thanks, David. Viv and I, I've already said that. It's been the worst week in the United States, Viv, since mid-April. Okay, it's only 6 weeks ago that happened, but it has happened. And there's one Fed person said, we've still got, in his words, ways to go when it comes to keeping inflation under control. And if you go back to every dip or every rally in the US market this year, it's always been prefaced by someone saying, oh, we're out the woods with inflation, or no, it's still sticky. It's up and down. It's like a bit of it's like a lottery out there.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, look, I've always said there's only two things that historically you know affect market returns. That's it, taxes and interest rates. And obviously taxes are more of a once-off kind of thing. It's not a constant thing, and interest rates are more of a stable kind of, like, you know, consistent kind of, you know, factor. And the fact that we've gone to a point right now where we've had such a disappointment with regards to inflation this year, and we've seen interest rates remain higher for so much longer, I do think that the market right now has been incredibly, you know, resilient in the face of this inflation numbers. I mean, I'm surprised if you told me last year when this rally had happened that, you know, we're going to have only one rate cut this year, if that. I would have been surprised that the market hadn't pulled back quite significantly. And we really haven't. We are still, you know, near all-time highs. And, I mean, David was talking about things like, for instance, Salesforce. I mean, look at Salesforce P ratio. It's like 50-something. But, you know, these things are dark components. They're very valuable, $200 billion company. But the market is still pricing on a lot of growth. And if interest rates remain this high, that growth has to be discounted because, you know, obviously you can't, you know, look at whatever your retailers are looking at the comparison and what you get in the bond market.
Yeah, quite right. Anyway, we'll wait for the next pronouncement in a month's time when they say, no, everything's under control now. Well, the next piece of data, whether it's personal consumer expenditure or whatever, which I think we're waiting for. But yeah, that's the United States. If you had a look, have a look at the way that the US has reacted to latest pronouncements. We've got the S&P 500. It's 5,260. That's the June futures, which is almost the spot month now. And that's down close to 100 points over the last week or so, which is quite a big move, but not disastrous. As you say, it could have been a lot worse. The US 10-year bond is yielding 4.56%, and the South African 10-year, after all that's been going on in the last 48 hours, 10.82%, which is a rally in the yield of 2.8%, or nearly 30 basis points. Elsewhere, on the commodities front, crude oil is 0.5% down, actually 0.7% down in the Texas brand, 78.66, and Brent crude oil down nearly 0.9% at $82.88 per barrel. The gold price is up a bit, but doing very little, 23.43, which is up $4. And just a quick look at the white metals, if you bear with me while I change my screen. So precious metals really taking the back seat to the financials. Come on, Lindsay, get your spot prices up there. I don't think there's going to be much to write home about, but let's have a quick look at that. With white metals, so important to South Africa. I've got, what have I got? Platinum is down 3 to 1040, nothing there. And palladium is almost exactly flat at $963 per ounce. So how's the AI business going, Viv?
Oh, quite nicely, actually. No, I mean, you're looking at some of these moves that we've seen recently. Obviously, NVIDIA's, you know, rally has been quite good. Just one with Salesforce, but it's not in my portfolio, so, you know, kind of positive on that. But if you look at the actual, like, you know, I just did a report today on like, you know, what the smart money is doing with Musk, what, you know, Zuckerberg, you know, Satya Nadella, Sundar Pichai, Sam Altman. I think the clearest indicator as to what the real good stuff, or what the real future looks like, is to look at the smartest people who have the most information are doing. And look, Sam Altman basically should have more information in AI than anybody else. And it came out over the last couple of days that he was given a choice. He wasn't, they said he was fired from our community. He wasn't. He was given a choice, OpenAI or run Y Combinator. And Y Combinator, as you know, is like the premier, you know, startup funder in the US. It funded like 4,000 companies, including things like, you know, Coinbase and so on, and Airbnb and et cetera. And in that environment, you like the one of the kings of the industry to be the guy that runs you know, Y Combinator. And he said he'd rather run OpenAI than run Y Combinator. And that just indicates to me that he has real faith in that industry to give up the one of the premier jobs in Silicon Valley in order to go and run this little startup.
Yeah, I was startled to see NVIDIA up 7%, I think, 2 days ago, because it's off such a high base, Viv. It's not as if it's a company, it's the penny stock, and suddenly goes up after its results and then continues to go up. It's massive, and I think it's worth $2.8 trillion now.
Yeah, it's basically as much as the FTSE.
Yeah.
The whole FTSE.
And some, yes. Yeah. Quite extraordinary.
And now it's worth, I mean, the FTSE is about 2.8, and it's about 2.8 as well. And so it's worth more than the DAX by quite a bit. And this is one company. And this is basically a company that is now worth more than Tesla, Facebook, I think like almost every car company in the world combined, Airbnb. There's a whole list of companies you can add up together that come to the valuation of NVIDIA on its own, including like Intel and AMD, et cetera. It's really been an incredible story.
It really has been. And you'll keep us up to date every week because I know it's a fascination of yours, both intellectually and materially as well. Viv, thank you very much for your time this evening. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss, and that was The 5 o'clock Shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.